How are we all doing? Good. I want to keep this as informal as I can. If you have any questions or anything, comments, whatever, just please interject during the tutorial or wait to the end. Either way is good. I'm going to be giving maybe 20 minutes, half an hour worth of slides first up, just to explain a little bit about what Anodex is and what we're trying to do with the project. Then we'll launch into building this video remixing web application itself. What I've done is I have a Pylons framework, which is basically just doing the data storage stuff. We're not going to hack on that so much. What we'll look at today is completely on the client side. It's all the HTML or the JavaScript to get this sort of video remixing stuff going in the browser. Right, so what is Anodex? I think Anodex adds two major new capabilities to multimedia content. I think the first thing that it gives us is web-aware media, and I'll describe what that is in a minute, and the second thing that it gives us is annotated media. And both of these by themselves are really powerful features, and when you combine the two of them, you can do some really interesting things. So web-aware media, what do I mean by that? First of all, I mean remote content, content that's sitting over there, out on someone's server, that you can interact with as if it were local. That's the ability to seek to arbitrary time offsets. It's maybe the ability to do some editing. There's all sorts of bits and pieces associated with this. By web-aware media, I mean browser-integrated media players. I mean pushing towards the day where your media player deals with media out of the box. Sorry, your browser deals with media out of the box. You don't need to go and install plugins. You don't need to go and download third-party content in order for things to work. I think web-aware media means support for remixing culture. A major initiative that has been taking place on the web is opening up the ability for communities to interact and share media and cut media up and play with media and do what they want. You know, it's turning people away from just consuming and into becoming producers themselves. And I think that Anodex encompasses some of that capability. And of course, I think that in order to truly interoperate on the web and be usable by everybody, that it's got to be free. You've got to have free tools, free libraries, free standards. So I mean, that's what I mean by web-aware media. Annotated media simply means that we add a text track to our media content. So we have music and video, or sound and video in media files which are already synchronized with each other. Why can't we add a text track as well, synchronize the text in? You might have seen some simple examples of this with things like subtitles. But you can also use this for metadata, tables of contents, scene information, time-triggered scripts. And a large part of Anodex is all about putting text into video and then exploring all of the different things that you can do with that. So uses of annotated media could include, say, indexing video content for searching. We've got, Google for text documents. People are starting to look at ways of searching images. Using annotations inside media, you can suddenly search for videos. And not just find a video which contains maybe, half an hour in the scene that you want to see. You can search for that scene and get to that scene and watch that scene and do it in a completely remote fashion. Providing videos with tables of contents. So when you navigate to a video on the web and you start watching it, you have a little table of contents which is automatically, dynamically generated in your browser, and you can jump up and down through that video as you want. So you open up access to the video rather than just having a single linear format that you have to sit and watch from beginning to end. Adding scripted time-triggered behavior to video, opening up a kind of an idea of active video where you're watching a video and an event occurs at a particular time in that video, which changes your browser somehow. Maybe it pushes you off to a different video, maybe it changes the style, the background, pops up some text. There's lots of different things you can do. Creating media content webs is another idea, so that you can be watching a video and you can seek out into another video at another time point, you watch that for a while, find another link which takes you back to the original video. It's more, again, than a linear format. It's like HTML is in terms of arbitrary links branching out to arbitrary other videos. There's other cases as well, such as providing multi-language subtitles, creating user-annotated media sites. I think this is actually kind of a cool idea. One of the biggest problems with using with being able to search video content is how do the annotations get there in the first place? If you open up user-annotatable media sites, then you have people who are watching various videos and who maybe are able to tag a particular time point and say, hey, I noticed that there was bunnies here. And so they open up the annotation, they go, bunnies. And when someone else searched for bunnies, that's automatically now part of the search process. And over time, as more and more people watch and annotate the video, you have more and more searchability. And there's many other uses as well. What we're going to concentrate on today, though, is building a really, really simple... Yeah, sorry? You're right, it just gets really boring saying media all the time. But you're absolutely correct. This applies to video, audio. We've been thinking about some interesting applications where you have multiple videos and multiple audio tracks in the same piece of content and various things you can do with that. I mean, one really simple thing you can do with that is just pick a piece of video and accompanying audio to display. But hey, maybe there's some interesting applications in multiple videos and interacting audio sitting on the one web page. But the really cool thing about all of this is that it is on the web. It's not local capabilities we're talking about. Anything I talk about today is stuff you can do remotely. So what we are going to build today is a really simple video remixing application. I'll talk about it more later, obviously. But we're not actually going to explore the annotation capabilities of Anodex in the video remixing application. However, I do have some demonstrations of the annotation capabilities, which we can look at later. So hopefully we'll be able to see all of the different things you can do. Anodex itself consists of a set of specifications, CMML, Anodex, and time-based URIs. CMML describes the textual format of the annotations. Anodex describes the combined file format, which we use. And time-based URIs describes the way that you index into a remote piece of content. So they're how you say, I want to watch this video, but I want to watch it from 15 seconds to 28 seconds. Anodex is a set of libraries. LibOxy, LibFishSound, LibOgPlay, LibCMML, LibAnodex, Hog, and Oog. We also make very heavy use of all of the ZIF codec and the ZIF libraries, and in fact what we do would not be possible if ZIF didn't exist. Anodex is a number of tools. OGSI tools, ANX tools, Hog has some tools, Oog. I should explain, Hog is a Haskell re-implementation of Og, and Oog is an OCaml re-implementation of Og. We've been playing around with these just as ways of investigating the Og spec better and getting to learn it more thoroughly. But it actually turns out there's some really useful stuff in there, so mainly for debugging and checking that things are working properly. Anodex is a set of servers. We have, I should say server applications. We have CMML Wiki, which is an implementation of user annotatable video content on the web. So it's got a little search application built in, and it's got user annotation built in, so you can set up a CMML Wiki instance, you can upload some video to it, you can let people go in and add annotations, and then you can search those annotations. Depending upon whether our CMML Wiki is running at the moment, I might be able to give you a demo of that later. Archive is a really fantastic audio annotation application which was written by Dennis Crowdy, who's just over there. Hi, Dennis. Dennis could probably describe Archive a lot better than I can, but the idea is for research purposes, to allow very, very in-depth annotation of music samples, and then, again, searching over those music samples. Mod Anodex is a very simple Apache module that slots into Apache 2, or there's an Apache 1 version as well, and gives you this remote file, this remote media indexing capability. So Mod Anodex is really the only server component that we're going to be using today. Everything else is done pretty much client-side. Anodex is a set of plugins. There's Cortado, which is a Java implementation of an Og player, and there's the Anodex plugin for Firefox, which is what I'll be using today. This is quite new. I think it's pretty cool. I'll show you later. But it's really the main reason for this talk. Yep. What are the Okay. We've got static builds for Linux 32-bit, for Windows XP, 32-bit, I think, and for Mac PowerPC. We're very close to having a Mac Intel build as well, and I'm going to, if I ever get my hands on a 64-bit machine, I'm going to have a go at doing a 64-bit version too. It's got no external dependencies, although sometimes I'm not quite so sure about the Linux one. I need to have a little bit of a closer look at that because on some machines it seems not to work so well. But it is designed to be a completely static standalone plugin, that's right. It's about, what is it? Compressed, it goes down on platforms which have got good compression applications, it gets down to about 300K compressed to download. So it's really small, yeah. Anadex is a set of wrappers. We have PHP Anadex and PyAnadex for people who want to integrate Anadex capabilities into systems which are written in PHP or Python. Actually, Ben, sitting up the back there, was the author of PyAnadex. And Gus did PHP Anadex. Oh, Perl. Great, there's Perl wrappers too, which Gus did. And Anadex, most importantly, I think, is community. We're building up a really solid community of hackers, of artists, of producers. You know, anybody's welcome to come and be part of it. We're hash Anadex on Freenode. We've got developers at anadex.net. There's www.anadex.net, which has all of the tools and libraries available for you to go and download. There's the Anadex Association, which is a not-for-profit organization that's designed to look after the interests of Anadex into the future. And, you know, we've got a bunch of hackers, a bunch of web developers, a bunch of designers. And actually, anyone who's sort of associated with Anadex in this room, maybe, you know, just, or wave. Waving's good. So, yeah, Dennis. So there's quite a few of us here. I just want to have a talk about our roadmap for the future. This is pretty hand-wavy, but hey. Anadex version 1.0 is going to come out real soon now. And by Anadex version 1.0, there are so many different disparate libraries that are part of Anadex that what we want to do is just do a stable release across all of the stuff that we call Anadex and say, this is 1.0. It works pretty well. Might be a couple of bugs, but it basically works. If you want all of it, just come and get it from here. So once we get our act together, that's going to come out. I'm hoping within the next month or so. And it's going to have stable libraries, tested behavior, and maybe, hopefully, it'll be a sort of a one-step install for Anadex creation and serving. Shut up, Ben. And then after that, we're going to start looking at Anadex version 2. And really, we've got some ideas about features that we want to put in the second version of Anadex, but more important, I think, is getting people who are using Anadex to come out and say, hey, it'd be really great if it could do X. Because then we can incorporate that into plans for Anadex version 2. Anadex version 1 gives you streaming time-indexable video with both bounded and unbounded time segments. So you can say, give me the video from 10 seconds to 20 seconds, or just give me everything from 48 seconds on. It gives you CMML track creation and retrieval, a Firefox plugin for integrated media streaming, enhanced support for OGG, including things like timestamp reconstruction and skeleton tracks. OGG is designed to be a very low overhead and constant overhead format. In order to do that, it introduces some complexities into the bitstream, and the idea of our enhanced OGG support tools, mainly LibOGSI, is to try and reconstruct some of that missing information and remove some of those complexities to make the OGG format easier to use for more complex applications. Here are some of the ideas that people have put forward for Anadex 2. Improved time support and more accurate time support. Image tracks, so that you can display images in your browser that are time-aligned with the video or the audio. Multiple track support, so that we can have, you know, 5 CMML tracks, 6 audio tracks, and 4 video tracks all sitting in the same content, and have that meaningful, and do things like not transmit anything that doesn't get used by the client to keep down on bandwidth costs. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here which is really cool and really fun and interesting. When you create a plugin for Firefox, you kind of sort of have a choice in Firefox 2.0. You can either create a windowed plugin or a windowless plugin. A windowless plugin integrates seamlessly into the DOM, and you can overlay content on top, and you can have content underneath, and it's really, really cool, and it doesn't work for Linux. Apparently, windowless plugins are going to work in Linux and Firefox 3. And so Anadex 2.0 is going to have these really nice windowless plugins, which means that you can do things like partially transparent overlays on top of video in a web page. That would be really cool. It may also be completely unneeded, because another thing that we're looking at is getting LiveOgPlay, which is the basis for the plugin, incorporated into Firefox 3 as the component that that implements the video tag, which is being recommended by WG for HTML5. If that happens, then that really does mean that when you download Firefox 3, you have video and audio. It's an interesting question. yes, because it's the same library, but no, it's not exposed. And one of the activities that we're looking at is trying to help to work with WG to expand the definition of the capabilities of the video tag to allow for additional behavior. The first step, I think, is getting all this really cool stuff out there based on the plugin to show people that it's used and that it's important and people want it. So that might not be Firefox 3, it might be Firefox 4, or maybe we can get it in Firefox 3. I'm actually really interested in GUI toolkit widgets. It's not that hard to wrap LiveOgPlay in, well, I mean, we wrapped it in the Firefox plugin infrastructure, but you could equally do it as a GTK widget or as a Qt widget and give people really nice video capabilities in their applications. And that's something I'm interested in exploring in Anadex 2.0. And of course, anything that other people, you know, come up with that they want to suggest as possible targets for Anadex 2.0 would be really cool too. Right, so here's an information slide, which I might put up again at the very end, so you can grab that information if you want it. I have finished talking about what Anadex is now, and we're going to move on to this particular web application that we want to build. Oops. So our web application, the goal is to allow users to upload videos, which we'll call sources, define and name sections of those videos, we'll call those sections segments, and then create new content by reordering segments from multiple different videos. And we'll call that new content a mix-up. So it's a very, very simple application. We've got a couple of caveats. We do not want to edit or modify the source content in any way. So we're not going to actually go into the server and physically cut up this content to construct our mix-ups. That would be too expensive. Instead, we're going to leave the source content as it is, unmodified on the server, and I'm sure you can see that that also means that if one were to implement this web application appropriately, you could use web video from multiple different sources across the web. You wouldn't be restricted to local content or to content on the server, on your server. And we also don't want to directly create and store the mix-up videos. We just want to dynamically, each time somebody asks to see a mix-up, we just want to pull out the appropriate pieces from the videos and display them in the client. That make sense? Pretty simple. I have a skeleton, a very, very simple skeleton of this application. It doesn't yet have any of the video capabilities, but this will give you an idea of what we're moving towards. So you can see we've got a set of sources. That there's some segments defined already, and there'll be a page that when you go into those segments, you'll see nothing at the moment, but eventually there'll be a way to edit the segment boundaries and preview the segment. And you can also create new segments, which again, at the moment does nothing. This is what we're going to be building. And then we've got the ability to add new sources, and we've got the ability to create new mix-ups. And at the moment, you can see I've set things up so that we've got all of our sources on the left and we've got our segments on the left, and we can construct a list of segments, but it doesn't do anything. It doesn't display anything. So we're not going to go through tedious web application database stuff, because I don't think that's particularly exciting. We're not going to go through tedious forms, because they're not very exciting either. What we're going to concentrate on today is exactly getting video into this application. If anybody wants to play along, I have set up on my machine a Subversion repository at that location and a track install which points to that Subversion repository as well. You can take this as far as you want. You can grab the latest version and try and get it working on your machine. You can grab the earliest version and go through the steps as I do. Or if you just get a track, you get a nice marked up version of each diff, which might help follow along. I will endeavor to get this source code up somewhere. Is that possible? Just as a table or something so that people can go and download it later if they want. Right, so that's what we're doing. Awesome. Okay, so once the talk's over, I'll put the source up on the wiki. This is our component layer. We've got in the browser, in the Firefox browser, we've got an Anadex plugin, which is doing all our video stuff. On the server side, I've actually set this up with two servers. There's a Pylon server, just using SQLite for all the database stuff, and there's an Apache server using one Anadex to serve the actual media content. You don't need to do it this way. You can, in fact, implement using the PyAnadex wrappers, enough infrastructure inside Pylons to... Enough infrastructure inside Pylons to serve the video directly through the web app. But the advantage of this approach is that you really can say, well, I don't necessarily want to use video, which is on my Apache 2 server, on my server. I can go and grab anybody's video from anywhere in the world and use it. Do people know what Pylons is? Okay. Pylons is a Ruby on Rails style environment for building web applications. It's based around Python rather than Ruby. It allows you to very, very quickly prototype and put together web apps. It's based around a model view controller architecture. So you have a model, which is a sort of a replica of your database or your data store. You have a view, which is effectively a set of HTML templates that define how your web application renders to screen. And you've got a controller that hooks those two things together. So it is the standard model view control architecture. It's incredible. It's absolutely amazing for quickly prototyping web applications. I don't know how good it is for building real web apps, because I don't do that. But for prototyping things, it's fantastic. I haven't used anything like it before. But today what we're going to actually concentrate on is just the view. We're not going to look at the model too much. We're not going to look at the controller. We're just looking at the way that we push the video out to screen. And you can get Pylons from pylonshq.com. It's a free open source environment. Now, Pylons uses Mako for its HTML templating. And what that allows you to do is have HTML template files which mix bog standard raw HTML and special marked up Python inside tags that look like that. There's also a number of special percent directives, which do things like allow you to define loops directly in the HTML file. And when Mako is bundled with Pylons, you get a number of helpers, which are in the C namespace inside Python. So you'll see what looks basically like HTML with this stuff littered through it. That's what we're doing. We're defining Mako templates. And there's more information about Mako templates at makotemplates.org. Right, our application layout is like so. We have four tables in the database, one for sources, one for segments, one for mix-ups, and a table called mix-up line, which is just there because for anyone who's done some database design, segment to mix-up is a many-to-many relationship, and you need to have an additional table to store that information. Just jump down to the bottom. The controller defines the behaviors that we want our application to have. So inside sources, we can list the sources. We can add new sources. And add form is just the intermediate step in adding a source. So you got to add form first. The user fills in all the details, and then that goes through to add. So these are behaviors. We have two behaviors for segments. You can edit your segment, and then you can save those edits. And we have three behaviors for mix-ups. You can edit and save your mix-ups, but you can also just go to a page to play them without getting all of the edit paraphernalia. So very, very simple, just a small number of behaviors. And in the view, we have five different templates. We have a template for add source, which we're not going to look at. We have a template for list sources, for edit segment, editing segments, editing mix-ups, and playing mix-ups. So this is it. This is the entire application. It's nice and small. I don't think we'll worry about that. It's not very Web 2.0, is it? Fortunately,
unfortunately. I have one that I prepared earlier. It's almost much better. There we go. That's much more 2.0. All right, so the first thing that we're going to do is add a little video preview window so that when you've got these sources displayed on the front page, you can actually look at the sources and see what's going on. So let's just investigate this code. What's easier? Is this view easier or this one? That one, right, okay. What we can see here at the top is we've got an unordered list, just here. And inside that unordered list, we're using some of the Mako infrastructure to just iterate through every row in c.sources. Remember, c is the namespace provided by pylons. And for each of those sources, we're going to run this little make row. It's almost like a function. It's a function, but it's defined inside the HTML. So here's the function right here. And all it does is it dumps out list items with a row name which is bolded. And what we're going to add to that is a link. So we're going to link to... link to a JavaScript function called play, where we just pass in a URL which we've defined from the row, and just display the row location. And down here is our play function, and you can see it's quite simple. We just grab the plugin from the DOM, right? So document.embeds is all the embedded elements in the DOM in the browser. We grab the first one, we set the current movie to the movie that we've been asked to play, and then we just say play. So it's really simple, the JavaScript. The last thing on this page is simply our actual libogplay plugin itself. And you can see it's just embed. You give it the type, application libogplay. We give it an empty source because we don't want it to start playing until somebody actually asks for something to play, and a width and height. Now, if I've done this right, I should be able to go to revision 4. Great. So what you can see down here is this is our video window. And when we click on one of these sources, we get some horrible audio.
You scared me to death.
What were you doing?
I was just appreciating.
And then we can just switch backwards and forwards between the different sources that we have, like so. So it was pretty easy, right? It doesn't take much to get some really nice video behavior in your browser. It's dead simple. Shut up. I mean, it's literally, you know, a couple of lines of JavaScript. It's an embed tag, and, well, you know, the stuff up there is really more for actually displaying the list than anything else. All right, that's good, but actually, you know what? I think it's pretty ugly having this video window down here, this sort of gray background when there's no videos playing. So I think what we should do is we should make it appear on demand and disappear when you don't want it anymore. Oh, before we do that, I put these little boxes in that describe some of the underlying data which is sitting in the pylons application. So you've got this table of sources, and each source has a name, and you can see we're pretty much directly using the name, the location. We're not using the length here, but we are using the frame rate. Okay, so that you can see sort of you've defined a little bit of data in the database, and you've given those table rows, table columns, names, And then you can pull those table columns out and use them almost directly in your HTML application. I think that's pretty cool. That's Python. That's really awesome. And then in the controller, which is sort of linking up our view to our model, all we had to do was say c.sources equals session.query source. And that just pulls out all of the sources from the database as objects which have, you know, names, locations, lengths, and frame rates, which are accessible just, well, like that. So, I mean, I think that's pretty amazing. That's really powerful. I'll pop up a few little bits like this every now and again to show you what's going on in the back end. The final thing here is that we have a class source which mirrors the database table source. And to get this URL behavior over here, row.url, we just define a URL function which uses appropriate bits and pieces to pull out the location of the media. So, right. Preview on demand. What we've added here is a div around our embed object, okay? And we've just given it an ID so we can refer to it in JavaScript easily, and a style. Now the style visibility hidden, you can switch between hidden and visible, and it'll make things appear and disappear. So all I'm showing you here is we can actually make use of DOM functionality to manipulate the browser. This is even though this is a window plugin, we can do some stuff like this. If it was windowless, we'd have even more power. Stop that. We now have two functions, create video window and hide video window in our JavaScript at the bottom. We simply use the DOM manipulation functions. In this case, document.getElementById pulls out an element from the DOM. Is it okay to talk about the DOM? Sorry. Everyone knows what a DOM is. Fantastic. Yep, there's no difference from the point of view of the HTML. It's purely done in terms of how the plugin itself interacts with the browser. And so you actually have to explicitly ask to be windowless in the plugin if you want to be windowless. And the main difference is that when a plugin is windowed, it gets allocated a you know, native window, whether that's an X window or on Linux or a HWND handle on Windows, or I don't know what they call themselves on Macs. But you get one of those, and you're in control of it, and you render to it, and you do whatever you want. And this is why you can't put anything on top, because you're in control, and you can't, you know, pass chunks back to the browser for the browser to render things into. With a windowless plugin, I think what happens is you have a render function which you get given a window, but you have to pay attention to the boundaries. And so you just render into the boundaries that you've been asked to update. I think it's something like that. And then all of the mouse events and keyboard events get filtered through Firefox. Apparently there isn't actually this distinction internal to Firefox, but there is when you build plugins for Firefox. Yep. Sorry, I just remembered I was supposed to be repeating people's questions so that the microphone picks them up. All right, so the question was, what limitations does having a windowed plugin, what limitations are imposed on you when you have a windowed plugin as opposed to a windowless plugin? I mean, it's mainly stylistic limitations in the sense that a common thing that you might want to do is display little icons that fade in and fade out above your video to say, hey, I've paused now, or I'm playing, or, you know, this video brought to you by Pants Corp or something like that. You might also want to do things like, I know some of the Flash plugins do all sorts of interesting, you know, pull-ins and pull-outs and pop up little images of things here and there. So there's that sort of stuff which we can't do at the moment until we go to windowless. In terms of functionality, not so much. I mean, you can pop those things up outside if you want them. They don't have to be part of the video window. Right, so yes, that's correct. You can't pop up controls inside the window. But the thing is that I mean, as you've seen, it's really, you just get video, you get nothing else. There's no, we don't implement any controls for you. That's all done in the HTML using JavaScript to drive the plugin. So it's not so bad, because if you put a really thin little control layer underneath, it looks like it's on top of the video. And you know, you also get to decide what controls you have. You don't, you're not stuck with the default ones provided by random manufacturers.
Right, so we've got our two functions. Create video window pulls the video div, which surrounds our plugin, out of the DOM, sets the visibility to visible. And I've just got, you know, plugin equals null, plugin equals document.embed zero, so the plugin variable goes between being null and being not null, depending upon whether the video window is visible, but it's not actually used. And then hide video window just sets the current movie to empty and hides. Yeah, it sets the visibility of the containing element hidden. And I should set plugin back to null there, but I don't. And then when we play, we simply create a video window before we set the current movie and play it. So it's really simple, right? It looks like this. So you can see there's no video window. To the after video. You can switch between videos if you want. And you can also just tell it to go away. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing that I really get excited about with this project. We've done in, what? You know, 80 odd lines of combined HTML and JavaScript. We've provided this kind of really intuitive, really simple, really obvious video functionality, and it looks like it's meant to be there. It doesn't look like it's a flash window which someone's imported, and I've had to rearrange the way my whole page looks in order to incorporate this. It's just part of the application. The question was what video formats we support, and the answer is just OGGIS. And I mean, more specifically, that's OGG Fiora for video, and OGG Vorbis speaks. Do we support FLAC yet, Conrad? Don't think we do. Then probably FLAC very soon for audio formats. Right, maybe. Our uploader doesn't. This is a very simple web app, but you could do that if you wanted to. You could use FFmpeg to Fiora and, you know, do a conversion on the way through. So, I mean, I guess our experience has been in the past that when somebody comes along and says, hey, here's a cool way of doing video in a browser, people put up with format incompatibilities. So Flash only uses a video format that didn't even exist before Flash Video came along, before the plugin came along, right? So I don't see it as a big issue, but others may. Right. Oh, and when Dirac becomes stable, we'll probably look at adding that as an alternative video format as well, once it gets its own OGG embedding. Because we can just... It's not important. All that's important is that they're all wrapped in OGG, and then everything else just falls out. This is a property of a library called libogplay, which is, you know, this is what's going into Firefox, this is what is sitting underneath the plugin and doing all the hard stuff, and this is what I want to wrap GTK and Qt things around later as well. Oh, right, okay, so if you can't pull Flash. You can't mix some Flash content and some OGG content. It's all got to be OGG content, but the internal the frame rate, the audio sample rate, the audio format, the video format, that doesn't matter so much. It's just all got to be OGG. Right, to get your favorite format supported, you would first of all want to make an OGG embedding for your favorite format. And second of all, you would then look at libogplay. It's not actually very hard
to do. It's a matter of importing your decoding library and passing it the raw samples as they come off the OGG embedding. And libogplay deals with all the synchronization and timing issues for you.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not actually that hard to support new formats, but you've got to get them into OGG first. Okay, so. That's our sources preview window. The next thing we're going to do is look at how you can define and play around with segments, you know, chunks of source that we're going to go and remix later. This page displays the video, right? We've got application debug play embed up the top to display our source video. And you can see c.source.url comes in through Python. If you go and click on one of these, I don't know if you can actually read the URL, but it's site segments ends up being our controller, edit ends up being our action, CC film ends up being our parameter. That parameter comes through as the parameter name source, and then in Python we just set the template namespace to have a variable source from that, and we grab the length out of that as well. So up here we say source equals c.source.url, and that automatically links up and gives us the appropriate video, the one that we've asked to define a segment from. Does that make sense? Kind of. We have this little div called progress bar, which is 640 pixels wide, 10 pixels high. And then we have another div called progress sitting inside that. They're different colors. And basically, we set a 100 millisecond interval in which we get out we get the play position out of the plugin. This is part of the JavaScript API of the plugin. Just it says, you know, you're 500 milliseconds in or something, you know, 2500 milliseconds in. We convert that by the length, using the length of the movie, 640 pixels, 1000 milliseconds to a second, because the length is in seconds. And the time, the get play position time, to work out a size as a proportion of 640 pixels. And then we just get our progress bar and set the width of the progress bar. Right, so this just gives us the behavior of we know where we are in the movie. I'll show you what that looks like. So if we try and add a new segment to a new computer, right, we've just got a really simple progress bar that tells us where we are in the movie. This comes back to a little bit to the philosophy of this plugin, which is we don't force you to use a set of controls defined by us. Right? I'm just an engineer. I don't have a design brain in my body. I just use rectangles. But designers are free to use whatever combination of images and transparency and pretty butterflies and, I don't know, bunnies. Right, to make this look good. Sorry? A very good idea. Okay, so the next thing we're going to want to do with this is we've got our nice little progress bar which is showing where we are. Well, we want to be able to seek, right? We want to be able to click over here to get to this point. So let's see what extra code is needed to do that. I'll just stop the video playing. Right, it's actually really, really easy. We add an onClick handler to our progress bar, which calls a JavaScript function called updateProgress. It passes in the event, which is the click location. Inside updateProgress, we extract our progress bar. We calculate our position in seconds based upon a number of different things. So e.clientX is the X position of the click we subtract the offset left of the progress bar to get our position from the left of the progress bar. And then we times it by the length of the movie and divide by 640 to scale back into seconds instead of 0 to 640. Right, so it's fairly simple maths. And then we just set the current movie to c.source.url, that's the name of the movie, right? And then we add this other little bit at the end. We go ?t=, and the time we want to view the movie at. You can see that down here a little bit easier. To seek to a particular time in a remote piece of content, all you need to do is ask to view that content from your remote server name, the video location, ?t=, the time you're interested in seeking to. Right, this is part of the time values and URIs specification that is part of AnnotX. So when we do that, you can see we now have pretty much instantaneous. Oops. Remote seeking. Yep. Okay. At the moment, no. it probably will be. When we were putting this plugin together, we realized that actually you do tend to get the data you need almost instantaneously. And on most connections these days, not wireless ones so much, but on wired connections, you get that data at a fast enough rate, if it's a low bitstream movie, which all of these are, to just display immediately. And we thought, rather than implement a conservative buffering scheme in the plugin, we're going to be really, really aggressive. We're going to display content as soon as we can. And what this means, if you just leave it like that, you get some stuttering on a poor connection. So the movie will start and stop a little bit before things really get going. Now, as a web designer, you can choose to implement buffering through JavaScript, but it's not forced upon you. Right. Right. So John was just saying YouTube is a massive, massive site with really good connectivity, and yet even that, at some times of the day, you have to wait for your video to come down. And therefore, it would be a good idea to have buffering inside the plugin. Well, I mean, we do. We have buffering. Okay. When the video starts to download, it keeps going as fast as it can, and it gets stored in a temporary file on your disk. All that we do is we don't expose a conservative buffering fullness requirement. Okay, so if you want to, as a web developer, impose buffering because you're, you know, the biggest video provider on the web and you know it sometimes that people are going to not be able to get the video fast enough, then you put in a little bit of JavaScript which pauses until the get buffered amount is above a certain level, and then you play. Actually, yes, there is. Sorry. Yes, there is one. Yeah. Sorry, no, you're right, there is a way of asking how much buffer data there is. Yes?
Would you ever consider putting a set of controls just like the players in file stuff just because they use so much and people may not write it down?
Question was, would I ever consider providing a standard set of seek and play and pause controls? Yes, in a JavaScript library. So you import your JavaScript library and you have default behavior if you want it. The question was, if you have a small window instead of a large window, do you only send a small amount of content, a low bitrate content instead of high bitrate content? At the moment, no. At the moment, regardless of the size of your browser, you retrieve the content and you display it. Now, part of what we were talking about, this multi-track stuff, having multiple tracks inside a single AnnotX file, addresses this problem. And it is a problem, right? So what you would do in that case is you would have maybe a low bitrate, a medium bitrate, and a high bitrate authored version of your video content sitting side by side in the file on the server. And then when the client contacts the server, part of the negotiation is how big a bitrate version will I get, right? So small ones will ask for low bitrate, large ones will ask for high bitrate. And then you can also temper that by the quality of the connection, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That seeking is done on the server. In the example with the progress bar, am I seeking on the client or the server? That seeking is being done on the server. Now, we're going to have to take a short break soon so that people can wake up and the video can be changed and I can have a drink of water. But before we do, there's just one point I want to make. If you use Flash Video to serve video content over the web, you can do it for free. But, kind of, unless you're not a non-profit. But if you want to do this kind of server-side seeking capability, again, you can do that through Flash Video, but you have to pay them a lot of money. Fantastic. The other side of that is that you also need to use the Flash plugin. Apparently, it's actually really hard to get it working properly inside the Flash plugin. I haven't had any experience myself, but people have told me that there's a lot of effort involved in this sort of thing. Cross-platform is the main issue, is it? We don't do it cross-platform. But we do it. With that much client-side code. It isn't hard anymore. It's really easy. We might take a break there.